So have you seen the videos? Maybe it's like in the greatest funny videos or whatever, or online videos of failures. You see those where people do something really stupid and it's an epic fail. And I like to say when they're doing that, they're saying, okay, Billy Bob, hold my beer. And then they go and they do something silly and it's a fail. You know what I'm talking about? Yep. Give you a couple illustrations of what I'm talking about. In my early 20s, I was playing golf. I was new to golf, and it was a wet morning, and my hands were a bit wet, and I had laid my club on the ground, so the grip was a bit wet, and I needed to hit my ball across a pond to the green. So for golfers, I was using a pitching wedge. The mate I was playing with was about 30, 40 meters in front of me, standing in front of me. I don't know why he was there. That makes no sense to me. But anyway, so I grabbed the club, put it in my hands, and I swing, and my club exits my hands and just starts doing somersaults over his head and right into the pond. Now, yeah, I've heard stories of golfers getting mad and throwing their clubs and things, but that was just a pure accident, and that was a fail for me. Another one more recently, a few months back, I was walking around in the foyer out here. I was actually carrying some stuff with Pastor Justin. He was leaving for the day, and we were walking quickly, as we always do, because neither one of us do anything slowly, you may have picked up. And there's some nice coffee tables out in our welcome space that are glass. They're clear. They're about this high, right? You seen those coffee tables? Well, there was one in the middle of the floor, and I'm walking down the hall at a high rate of speed, did not see the coffee table, and I looked like Superman flying over the table. And I had a busted shin and everything and scraped up knee and all that at the end. Justin was scared because he didn't know what I was going to do at that moment, but and he thought I might have been injured. But again, I'm glad that wasn't on video, because that would be one of those epic fail moments. How about you? You got some of those in your life? If you got videos, send them to us so that I can use those for sermon illustrations in the future. But have you ever tried to push a door that says pull? Yeah? I actually did that between services today after telling this the first time. And in the vision room door, I've used that door hundreds of times, and I was trying to do the wrong way. I forget which way it is, but I did that today. You feel silly, don't you? Or how about climbing up a set of stairs and you have an accident, you trip, right? Anybody recognize that photo? It's gone around the world 1,400 times, and it's like, the guy just tripped, and now it's a national incident for the Americans or for the worldwide. It's like, okay, this guy is crazy and, you know, non-functional now just because he tripped going upstairs. Please do not judge me when you see me trip sometime, because, yeah, it's not because I have dementia or anything like that. We've all had moments of failure in our lives. Sometimes those moments of failure are simple, and it doesn't really affect much, and all of that. It's not a big deal. Pushing a pool door is not a big deal. Throwing my golf club into the water was not a big deal. But some of our failures in life are more impacting and life-altering. Maybe you've had a major failure in a job, in a career. Maybe it's in your education, you had a major failure. Maybe you failed in finances and it's left you in a destitute place. Maybe you failed in a relationship and that's left you hurting. Maybe you've had some spiritual times in your life where there's been failure. Often, when we experience failure, we end up riddled with shame and guilt. We feel unworthy. We feel unacceptable. We feel disappointed in ourselves, and we've disappointed people around us. Anybody relate to this? And my hand is up, by the way. Failure is not fun. But I want to share a truth with you this morning that can turn that for you a bit. Failure is not final, okay? It's not fun, but it doesn't have to be final. Over the last few weeks, we've been going through a series called Truth. And a few weeks back, we looked at a guy called Peter, and Peter had an epic failure moment, if you remember, when he denied that he even knew Jesus, right? So Peter walks away from that, feeling the guilt, feeling the shame, feeling unworthy, feeling like he's a big loser and he would never do anything profitable again in his life. That's how Peter would have been feeling at that moment. It says that he went out and he wept bitterly. Well, today, I want us to look at another day in Peter's life, a day that will help us see and accept for ourselves that failure doesn't have to be final. John chapter 21 tells us the story about Jesus meeting up with the disciples on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And in that story, he and Peter are the primary characters, and they're going to have some interaction. But before we get to that, we need to make sure that you understand the person Peter. Because if you don't understand Peter, this story has much less significance. You won't understand why it's such a big deal. So going back to the person Peter, and by the way, I want to publicly thank Deanna. She helped me with this sermon. She was my advisor as I was coming up with some of these things. But Peter, first of all, was a fisherman. All right, Matthew chapter 4 says this. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once, they left their nets and followed him. So when Jesus met Peter, Peter was a professional fisherman. The account in Luke's gospel, the same story, tells us that Jesus was teaching a crowd there at the seashore. And he asked Peter, hey, Peter, can you take me out in your boat a little ways so that, because the crowd's so big, they'll be able to hear me better and I can teach from there. He finished the teaching and then said, hey, Peter, let's launch out, take your boat out into the deep waters and let's go fishing. Peter said, Jesus, I'm a professional fisherman. I've been fishing all night and I've caught zip. Nada, nothing. But because you said it and you seem like a nice bloke, hey, we'll go do it, all right? So Jesus said, okay, Peter, put down your nets. And they got the catch of a lifetime, more fish than they'd ever seen before in one space at a time. Peter's response to that was to immediately fall to his knees, to recognize his sinfulness and say, you're the Lord. He recognized who Jesus was in that moment. So that was Peter's introduction to Jesus. And Jesus then told Peter and the others, hey, follow me and you'll be fishers of men. You're going to stop fishing. That's important. You're going to stop fishing. You're going to come with me and we're going to fish for people. So Peter left what he knew. He left what was comfortable. He left what was familiar. He left his family to follow Jesus. Then we see over and over again, Peter as the zealous, overconfident, impulsive overachiever. Peter in Matthew chapter 14, Jesus was walking on the water and Peter said, hey, if that's you, let me come do that too. And he jumped out of the boat and he walked on the water. In Matthew 16, Jesus predicted his own death. He said, he told the disciples he was going to die and then he was going to rise again. And Peter said, no, you're not. He's talking to God and he's telling God, you're wrong. I'm rebuking you. No, you're not going to do that. And Jesus said, get behind me, Satan. That should have been a hint for Peter to kind of back it off a bit. But Peter is so absolutely zealous. Peter was in Matthew 17. He took Peter, James, and John up on a mountain, the Mount of Transfiguration, it's known as. And there was an event there where Moses and Elijah came down. They saw a vision of Moses and Elijah. And Peter said, hey, let's build three tents here or three booths to memorialize this mountain and this place because of what just happened. He saw a miraculous event and he wanted to do something. I can so relate to Peter wanting to do something all the time. And that's what Peter was like. In Matthew 26, Jesus told all the disciples, you will all desert me. Peter said, no. I will die for you. Even if all the others desert you, not me, I'm better than that. It's not going to happen. Then we know that in the garden when Jesus was arrested, Peter cut off a guy's ear because he's just so zealous. He's so out there in their face, making bold declarations. And then we see Peter in his moment of failure. We see Peter, Jesus being tried right before he's crucified. And three times, Peter said, no, I don't even know Jesus. Three times. In that moment, it says Peter went out and wept bitterly. He was wrecked. He was shattered. He failed. And he knew it. He felt shame. He felt guilt. He felt unworthy. He felt like, how in the world did I get to this place? That's where we pick up the story today. In John 21, it says, later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon, Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the son of Zebedee, the two other disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. I find it very interesting that two times we have accounts of Peter actually out fishing, and both times he caught nothing. And he's a professional fisherman, another failure in Peter's life. But that's not the point we need to get from these verses. What we need to see here is that in times of failure, we want to return to the familiar. We want to return to that safe place, that comfortable place, that thing where we think we know how it's going to end, and I'm capable, I can do this. So Peter goes back to fishing. He is a leader, so other people follow him. You see that? The other six disciples that were there said, hey, we'll go too. So even though Peter is feeling like a failure, he still has great influence. He didn't even realize the influence he still had as a leader here. There are several ways to interpret this event that they're out there fishing. Some would suggest that Peter had completely decided, hey, I'm done with Jesus. I'm not going to follow him anymore. So I'm going back to fishing and that's going to be my life now. I'm not so sure about that. Some have suggested this was just a casual fishing trip. Don't think that's it either, because they're going to drop down the net and get 153 fish in a few minutes. And if it's a casual fishing trip, you wouldn't be using nets and getting that many fish. Some have suggested that because they were in Galilee, that shows that they had given up and that they were doing a runner, all right? That Galilee was 8 miles from Jerusalem, where the tomb was. Jesus had said, after I rise from the dead, I will meet you in Galilee. So I reckon the disciples were in Galilee because they knew they were meant to be in Galilee. Right. So those that would say that they would really discredit Peter because he's fishing, I really think that Peter needed to live. He needed to eat. He needed to provide and things like that. So they were where they meant to be. He was just making a living, doing what he knew to do. But I would also suggest that it was an option that he was going to go back to this full time and that was going to be his life. Peter was not in a state of wandering, but he was in a state of wondering. Who am I now? What am I going to do now? What does all this mean? Peter's failure had caused him to feel disqualified, not good enough, inadequate. He was filled with shame and guilt, wondering how he got to this place and thinking he could probably never even recover from it. I've denied the Lord. This once overconfident, overzealous, get it done, overachiever now was filled with self-doubt. And it had wrecked him. He had taken on failure as an identity. It wasn't just a moment for him. This was now his identity. I'm not good enough. It was his overconfidence and zeal that had actually landed him here. That's what the problem was, because he was so bold in making those declarations about what he would or wouldn't do. And that's where he found himself. He's severely humbled now. Verse 4, it says, at dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, fellows, have you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat and you'll get some. So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. It's comforting to see here that in our times of failure, Jesus does not abandon us. Jesus does not abandon us in our times of failure. This scene would have been familiar. It would have been a deja vu moment for Peter, because when Jesus called Peter, he was out fishing and he brought in all those fish because Jesus said, drop your net there, and he did. And as Jesus said, drop your net on the other side, I think Peter's mind would have went, uh-oh, what's going on here? What's going on? And then they got the miraculous catch of fish again. And that would have started just, his heart would have been racing and he would have been thinking, wow, I recognize this moment. This was a good moment for me in the past. It was certainly Jesus on the shore. He knew at that moment. And all during his moment of failure, Jesus never abandoned him. Warren Wiersbe said it like this in regarding this account. He said, the difference between success and failure was the width of the ship. We are never far from success when we permit Jesus to give the orders, and we're usually closer to success than we realize. I don't know about you, but have you ever given up on something to find out that, oh, wow, if I just went a little bit longer, I was almost there? Anybody like that? Yeah. They were that close to success. It's a great reminder. Jesus turned their present failure, no fish, into a miraculous catch of fish. And he's about to do the same thing for Peter's life, to turn his failure into a miraculous catch for eternity. It says this, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, jumped into the water, headed to the shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to shore, for there were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. Bring some of the fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. Now, it took six guys in the boat to drag this net this far, and then Simon Peter goes and brings the net in by himself, okay? The adrenaline is running here. He is pumped. There's something going on. He's excited that Jesus is there again. It says there were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. Now this is the old Peter, the one that jumps out of the boat, gets stuff done, moved to action. He's probably Action Man for the kids in the room, if you know Action Man. Jesus feeds them. They have a nice breakfast on the beach, and I find it remarkable. He had already cooked it. It was already done, but he said, bring some of the fish you've just caught. He didn't need them to provide the fish. He had already provided it, but he allowed them to participate. That is rich. You know, when God wants us or allows us to get involved in what he's doing, the reality is he doesn't really need us. That's exciting, isn't it? Just a happy thought for you today. God doesn't really need us, but he wants us. He wants us to be involved. He wants to allow us to participate in what he's doing. It's also beautiful here that Jesus is about to have a major confrontation with Peter and restore him. We'll get to that in just a minute. But before he did that, he allowed Peter to dry off, to get warm, to have some food, and to have some fellowship with his friends and with himself before the next step. Jesus, who had been denied and deserted by these guys, responds with tremendous love and grace. It says, after breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied. You know I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the same question. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said. You know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. What we learn here is that on the other side of failure, we can experience restoration. Whatever it is for you, whatever's gone on in your life, where you felt that failure, where you felt that shame and that guilt, on the other side of that failure, you can experience restoration. That's what happened for Peter, and that's what can happen for you and I. Jesus addresses him as Simon, son of John. That's more evidence that he'd gone back to fishing his previous life, because Jesus had changed his name to Peter, the rock, okay? And now he's calling him Simon, son of John. And he says, do you love me? Three times. Public declaration. Peter had publicly denied Jesus three times previously. I think there's a great parallel there that the three denials were offset by the three affirmations of love. He says, do you love me more than these? He's talking about the fish there. Some think that maybe it's the disciples, but that would create competition amongst them. And Jesus was never on about them competing with each other. So Jesus says, do you love me more than fishing, Peter? Are you ready to give up fishing to follow me? Peter said, I love you. A lot's been made of the words that Jesus used for love and the words Peter used. Jesus used a word called agape love, which means unconditional love. Peter used a word called phileo love, which means a brotherly kind of love, an affection. And like I said, there's a lot been made of it, but I don't want to make too much of a big deal about those two Greek words. Jesus and Peter were speaking in this conversation in Aramaic. Okay, so the Greek translators have used that and different words, but those two words, agape and phileo, the Apostle John, who wrote the book of John, and I know I'm going deep here, so stay with me for just a second. We'll come back out of this in a minute. John used those words interchangeably throughout his gospel, throughout his writings. There seemed to be no difference or no pattern to how John was using those words. So while it could be slightly significant, I don't want to overemphasize it. The point is that Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? And Peter responded, yes, I love you. And Jesus said, that much love is enough. I accept you. I accept the love that you're going to give me, and I want you to go and feed my sheep. I want you to take care of my lambs. Peter, his first call was to be an evangelist, to be a fisher of men. Now he's being called to be a pastor, to look after the sheep, to shepherd the flock, is what Jesus is saying here. And then he tells Peter, he says, this is what you're signing up for, Peter. I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, follow me. We know that Peter died by crucifixion. And Peter, when he was crucified, said, crucify me upside down because I'm not worthy to die the same way Jesus died. Jesus here is telling Peter that his calling was going to cost him his life. And I don't know about you, but if I'm Peter, at that point, I might start second thinking it. I think, oh, I'm going to die. I'm going to be crucified. I'm not so sure. I don't think that went through Peter's mind at all. I think this was the ultimate restoration for Peter because Peter had declared, I will die for you. And Jesus is saying, yes, you will. Yes, you will. You are restored and you're going to live for me. You're going to shepherd the flock. You're going to do all these things and you're going to die and it's going to be hard and you're going to do it for me. He's saying, I accept you. I am restoring you. What do we do with all this? What do we do with a story about Peter failing? He denied Jesus. It devastated him. He felt shame, guilt. He felt inadequacy. He felt like he couldn't come back from that. Jesus met him right where he was. He was going back to fishing, and Jesus met him right there and says, I accept you. I restore you. He restored Peter. He didn't reject him. Have you had those moments in your life? Those moments that you've really messed up. And I'm not talking about throwing a golf club in the water or tripping over a glass table or tripping upstairs. I'm talking about you made some really silly life decisions that have really messed things up for you. Anybody have those moments? I think we all have. And those moments, for some of us, we fail and it riddles us with shame and guilt and we feel unworthy, we feel inadequate, we feel like we'll never amount to anything. We feel like there's no hope. We've disappointed everyone else and we're disappointed in ourselves. Does anybody ever feel like that? My hand is up. I want to share with you what Jesus would want you to know today. He would want you to know, and he wants me to know, your failure is not final. Did you hear that? your failure is not final. You do not have to be defined by your worst moment. Think about your worst moment. You want people defining you by that? Stop defining yourself by that. We all do it. We carry that guilt and shame. Jesus, we want you to know you're valuable. You're important to me. I want to restore you. My only question Jesus would have for us would be, do you love me? Do you love me? And if we say yes, he'd say, okay, that's good enough. I want to restore you. All of us have failure. We all need grace. Jesus says today, come. I want to grant you forgiveness. I want to give you grace. I want to restore you. I want you to remember it like this as you go away this week. I want you to make a declaration for yourself. Make a declaration that I will not be defined by my failure. I will not be defined by my failure. I will be refined by his forgiveness. So you got a choice there. Which one do you want? You want to be defined by failure and live with shame and guilt and inadequacy and all of that all of your life? Or do you want to be refined? That failure is real, okay? I'm not saying if we've messed up that it's not real. It is real. But Jesus can use that failure to refine us through his forgiveness. I'm going to ask everybody, bow your heads, close your eyes. After sharing something like this, and we look at Peter's failure and the feelings of guilt and shame, if you're like me, and I've been wrestling with this all week and even before, maybe you would want to say, you know what, I can identify with Peter. I've had failures in my life. I've had moments of failure, and I still live with some of the shame, some of the guilt, some of the inadequacies and fears that caused. Friends, I want to pray for you if that's you. So I would ask you, just let me know by lifting your hand. Just say, hey, that's me. That's me. I've got stuff that haunts me. And I want you to pray for me so that I can be restored. Anybody? Just lift your hand. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Others, thank you. Thank you. Father, thank you for showing us that our failure doesn't have to be final. For those in the room that just raised their hand, and for those that didn't, but Lord, know in their heart that that's them. Lord, I want to pray for them. I want to pray that you would help them to realize your forgiveness, that they would not be defined by the shame and the guilt and the failure that has been haunting them. I pray, Lord, that you would free them from that, and that they would be able to trade that in for your forgiveness, and they would be able to leave the failure with you and walk away with forgiveness. Lord, I pray that you would empower each of us to live our lives in the freedom that you provide, the freedom from shame and guilt because of our failures. And Lord, help us then to know your ways and to walk in them. Lord, as you've restored us and forgiven us, help us to be faithful to you. In Jesus' name, amen.